Colleagues, welcome back to the office. Welcome to our podcast and presentation for today. My name is Steve Yass, and it is a pleasure being with you to present Online Meeting and Collaboration Tools, Comparing Your Options, Part 1. In this podcast, we are going to be looking at ways that we can communicate and meet effectively online with our staff, colleagues, vendors, and more. In this COVID world that we're living in, I mean, this kind of is the new normal in terms of being able to conduct business virtually and remote. And how do we do it in an effective manner where we're getting value out of our time with our colleagues and value out of the meetings that we're having to give? And how can we conduct these meetings effectively and not just meet with people over Zoom? I think, meeting with Zoom is a component of it, but working effectively remotely is so much more than just having this video conversation with somebody. And so what are some of the tools, techniques, products, services, platforms, hardware, software that we can consider? As well as what are some of the processes that we need to design for our organizations to be able to effectively do this for our companies? It's more than just handing some hardware to our staff and saying, have a nice day, and sending them home and letting them fend for themselves. So in today's course, we're going to go ahead and look at all things that are related to online meetings and collaboration. We're going to start first with taking a look at, essentially what does it take, as a broad overview with software and hardware for what we can need to establish for our companies. We're going to talk through some of the benefits of working from home and why you should consider this as a core process for your company, not only for these weird COVID times, but as well as going forward. Some of the reasons, for example, you might want to keep the office. Some of the risks, essentially, of working from home are also important to look at, too. I personally believe that these risks can be mitigated, but let's acknowledge them for what they are and see if we can find some ways around them and to help reduce their risk and exposure. And then I'll also give you plenty of tips and tricks, the essentials from working from home, as well as some of my personal tips that have worked out well for me. I'm a 10-year veteran from working from home. Our whole company, Devmatix, we work from home. What's worked well for us? I'm going to share my thoughts with you as well. We're then going to take a look at collaboration tools from a company view as well as an individual view. We're going to look at it from a technology view as well as kind of like a policy and company operations view as well. We'll talk about also with respect to the broader picture here, the overall client experience, firm experience, and staff experience, and more. This course is actually being presented in two parts, so we're going to cover the first part of that today, and in our second presentation of this, which will occur in a little bit, we're going to go ahead and dive into the collaboration and real-time co-editing features and functions that you should consider as well. So, before we get started here, I do want to remind you and draw your attention to that this podcast is eligible for CPE credit. How awesome and cool is that? You can, after watching or listening to today's class, head on over to cpetoday.com, take a brief 5-question quiz, and earn a credit for today's class. If you are a CPA, if you're an enrolled agent, if you are some sort of financial professional or office professional that needs education as a component of your licensing, guess what? You can use this as a way of staying on top of your credits. And it's simple. And besides our podcast courses, which are available for free for the content, we have a whole wealth of other materials and courses from a wide range of business topics to pique your interest. So if you'd like it, go ahead and check it out, cpetoday.com, and use course code today, OMC1. Now, today's class is actually a recording from a State Society conference I did a couple weeks back as we're off this week and I'm on the road presenting from my beautiful mobile chateau here. So I hope you enjoyed today's presentation. I'll join you back here at the end. We'll have 3 brief review questions and then we'll go ahead and wrap up for the day. Thank you and enjoy the show. All right, so let's go ahead and start diving into our first section for today. And let's talk about what it takes to meet and collaborate online. Now, what we're going to talk about, I'm going to give you a quick overview on this, and then we're going to go ahead and dive into some of the benefits and risks for remote work and telecommuting. And then we'll look at some sort of specific technology and hardware that goes along with it. Now, with respect to working and meeting online and working anywhere, it's really two spheres of influence that we're going to need to consider. We're going to need software stuff that allows for our mobile phones and desktop computers and laptops to be able to connect. And then we're also going to need physical hardware stuff, physical infrastructure, keyboards and mice and monitors and phones and things of this nature. We're going to look at a lot of these different components today. You know, from the software side of this, things for meeting online, things for tracking and promoting productivity, collaborating and communicating, portals for facilitating data transfer between clients, tools to help assist with project management, as well as things in our line of business software. Line of business software would be the software that runs our organization. For example, customer relationship management, document management, and more. These tools are essential with respect to facilitating that business. It's often the software that makes our business run. Now, on the hardware side of it, thankfully, the requirements aren't very strict, and they can modify and adjust depending on the specific needs of the staff who's working, as well as what their role is to the organization. But certainly we need to think through things like how that user is going to connect to the internet and remain connected to the internet. Things like their computer, their smartphone, as well as if they happen to have a desktop phone connected over VoIP. And then also, what kind of microphone will they be using? What kind of camera will they be using? As well as any sort of lights and background if they're going to be doing some presenting or keeping a professional demeanor of the conferencing that they're doing, as well as any maybe sort of like, let's say, scanners and monitors. We're going to be looking at many of these different aspects. And if anybody has any specific requests or questions on specific hardware or software, again, go ahead and let me know. Now, before we dive into the specific recommendations for software and hardware, let's talk about some compelling reasons for work from home, work from anywhere, some reasons to keep the office, and then I'm going to give you my essentials from working from anywhere and what that might be, as well as some tips that you might want to consider as you start to plan your work from anywhere for your organization. Now, why is work from anywhere, work from home a great idea? Well, first and foremost, it can be a tremendous cost savings to the organization. On average, telecommuting can lower operating and real estate costs by $11,000 per employee per year. That's a permanent cost reduction. And if you think about it, that's money that goes straight to the bottom line to the organization. You know, once that employee essentially moves home permanently, you're shifting a lot of the costs from the company to the employee. Now, just as a quick piece of advice, one of the things you might want to consider is investing in that employee to build a home office. In our company, for example, we do offer a reimbursement for staff that work from home. You know, instead of us having to incur the real estate costs and the operating costs of having an office, it makes a lot more sense, at least in our business, economically, to pay the employee fairly and adequately for working from home, and then also giving them a stipend or a reimbursement for some of the technology or some of the to offset some of the costs that they might incur from working from home. So in our company, for example, we help the employee get the necessary technology, and then we also help offset those costs. And we find that that makes it fair and equitable for both parties. It's still a tremendous cost savings to us, but the employee isn't having the brunt of it. So you might want to consider that. That might be a very equitable way of handling that for your organization. Generally, employees feel increased satisfaction with respect to the work that they do. One of the things I like to say about work from home is that when you have the permanent ability to balance your work life and your professional life, generally people feel a lot happier. They also feel a lot more satisfied in not having to commute. My wife, who works in our business as well, she's one of our project managers and works on our marketing team, prior to working for us, had a 2-hour commute each direction. Living here in Southern California, you know, we're not known for having wide and open roads. We're known for traffic and congestion. As such, you know, that 2-hour commute each way really kind of, you know, ground her down. Now that she doesn't have to do with that, I mean, there's significant increased satisfaction, both in terms of her personal life as well as in her job life as well. So generally, employees that don't have to commute or have a very minimal commute or maybe only 1 or 2 days a week generally feel better about the work that they're doing, which leads to increased retention and better overall work-life balance. One of the things I like to say is that my personal life meets my work life and vice versa. Working from home generally leads to decreased absenteeism as well as decrease in attrition. You know, for better or worse, if you're not working from home, it's not like you can't go in if you're not feeling 100%. You don't have to worry about getting somebody sick. We do take sick days from time to time, but for the most part, you know, people are present and available. Increased flexibility in work hours. I could tell you that this is really nice. When you work from home, you have the ability, for example, to hire people from anywhere, and that gives you increased capacity and increased work hours in your organization. We just hired a great new staff member from Kansas. You know, he's thrilled to be able to work with us because he's going to be able to work either in Central Time or in Pacific Time, but giving that flexibility makes it really easy. And that flexibility allows him to have a great family life. You know, he can essentially shift his hours as needed, take his kids to school in the morning or take a walk in the afternoon. That increased flexibility, I think, is appreciated on both sides. Working from home definitely decreases energy and fuel requirements, you know, as we're not in our cars more often, as well as increases our candidate pool of the people we could choose to hire inside of our organization. As I mentioned, our company is based here on the West Coast, but we just hired a gentleman last week in Hutchinson, Kansas. We're very excited by that, as I think he will be a great option for our company and a great staff for our company. And it's crazy to think that if you, in the traditional sense, only hired people that live within an hour of your office, man, you're really limiting the talent pool of people you could potentially work for. But when you have work from home and you have these online collaboration and meeting options and cloud technology options, the world is your candidate pool. You can hire anybody from anywhere, including a lot of people that might not be a great initial option. You know, for example, people who are stay-at-home parents, people who live in more rural areas, millennials, military spouses who move frequently, people with disabilities and more. You could find people that meet your qualifications anywhere. As great as the office is, as great as work from home is, there are some compelling reasons to keep the office. You know, however, what I will say, I tend to be a more, let's say, pragmatic, as maybe even an optimist with respect to working from anywhere, working from home, because I feel that these reasons that are risks to working from home, they can be mitigated with good company culture and proactive work on part of the company to make that possible. But when you work from home, you know, there's less collisions, you know, and I mean collisions in the sense of water cooler talk, collaboration, joint projects and things of this nature that you would normally get from when you see people on a day-to-day basis, as well as feelings of isolation in terms of, you know, I work from home and I never leave my home, you know. However, again, I think most of these can be mitigated. So less collaboration can certainly occur. It's hard to replicate the entrepreneurial efforts and face-to-face collaboration that you would get from just walking and talking to a colleague down the hall. I could tell you that allocating time for that in your organization and being okay with people taking personal time when they're on a Zoom call or on a Teams call can certainly go a long way. Depending on the nature of your organization, there could be security concerns for staff working with sensitive information. I have a good colleague of mine who worked for a defense contractor for many, many years. He's recently left that position, but during the COVID years, he actually moved home, you know, and this was the first time that anybody in his company had worked from home, and they did so because of COVID. So I think some of the security stuff can be mitigated, especially with having good staff and good technology, connecting securely. But, you know, depending on the nature of what you're working with, whether it be financial data or healthcare data, you know, there might be some additional concerns to think about. Possible increased cost to the employee from working from home. You know, certainly, you know, having additional energy usage is to be expected. Maybe you need to bump up the extra internet plan so you get a faster internet connection for your home. You know, as I mentioned, I think the way to mitigate that is to provide an expense reimbursement to your staff if they choose to work from home. You know, in our company, it's a couple $100 a month, but, you know, again, it would still be cheaper than even the cheapest office in Southern California. Difficult to understand the company's direction as well as company culture can be difficult to establish and maintain that spiritu de corps that you find when you're in the trenches with somebody trying to battle through a client project and find success. So I would say, again, establishing good positive company culture, even though you're remote with each other, you know, that you could still talk and communicate and collaborate and reach out and ask questions. One of the things that we do inside of our company that makes a big difference is that for us,
We still get together physically in person at least once a year, if not twice or three times. And what we find is that when we get together in person once or twice a year, we tend to focus on the relationship building, big picture stuff, you know, the business planning side of it. And then when we're back at our homes, you know, working from our home offices, we tend to focus more on the transactional stuff. And for us, that works out really well. You know, a couple times a year, we try to figure out what we're going to do, how we're going to do it, how we're going to achieve whatever business goal we're looking for. And then when we go home, it's back to business. It's the transactional stuff. Hey, has this been billed? What's the status of this project? Have you worked on this? So on and so forth. But we allocate our physical time together, our in-person time together, to focus on those big picture ideas. Now, I think probably the biggest thing that organizations worry about from work from home is that low producers can fly under the radar. And I'd be curious to know what you think about this. For those of you who maybe worked at home from COVID or from, you know, currently, you know, on average, what do you think you do? Do you think you work more from home? Are you more productive from home? Or do you think you're more productive in the office? Go ahead and leave me a comment and let me know what you think and what your experience has been. I think if COVID has shown us anything is that people now can be very productive working from home, that being in a physical office is not a requirement for doing productive work. If anything, I think that most of us would find that we're more productive working from home than we have been in the office, that we get more hours in and the quality of the work goes up. Most of the business owners that I've spoken with have shown and demonstrated that, if anything, it's been more successful for them working at home than it has been back in the office. Now, there are some essentials from working from home that you should consider. You're going to need some communication tools, for example, email, Microsoft Teams, Zoom, and others to stay in contact with each other. You're going to need remote access tools to access your files, documents, and more. You're certainly going to need security tools and procedures to help keep your information private. Applications and cloud services to support this work. You know, when something is based in the cloud and it's in a data center, for example, in AWS and other places, is that it's natively cloud. Even if you have a physical office, everybody in that physical office is connecting to that cloud in that same way. So, I mean, it really doesn't matter where you're physically located anymore, as everybody is remote in the context to the data itself. And collaboration tools to work with colleagues. Now, I do have some physical hardware recommendations. This is just getting started stuff. And we're going to go into further depth here as we continue through this presentation. But here are the physical hardware pieces that, at a minimum, I recommend that you have for your organization. Well, if possible, a dedicated private workspace with comfortable seating. That makes all the difference in the world. You know, you can have a slower computer, you can have a slower internet connection, but the ability to focus and be able to concentrate on a particular project without constant interruption, in my opinion, is the best that you can hope for. Now, if you can't get a dedicated private workspace, at a very minimum, you should consider at least dedicated work hours. I'm reminded of a good friend of mine who has two small children. And my friend's wife, her office is in their toddler's room. And she works during the hours that the toddler is in daycare. And that's where she works because she can't have a physical dedicated workspace. She at least has dedicated work hours. And they've made accommodations with their family to support that. I know it can be difficult for folks, but the more you can not be working at the kitchen table, the better you're going to feel about the work you're doing and the better balance you probably find with your family life. A lightweight but powerful laptop. I'm personally a big fan of the Lenovo ThinkPads. That's what we purchase for our companies. I could tell you when you're thinking about hardware, in terms of, you know, like a laptop, I would say you should be budgeting on average about $1,800 to $2,500 for the device itself. That's what we budget. And that's a machine that you can expect to last about anywhere from 2 to 4 years, somewhere in that range. Fast, consistent, high-quality internet access, whenever possible, fiber internet. But if not fiber, you might want to consider, for example, coaxial coming from service providers such as Spectrum, Comcast, and others. Again, we provide an expense reimbursement to our staff to ensure that they get a good quality internet plan, something more than, for example, like DSL. Usually DSL is the last option that we're going to want to go for. As much as possible, we try to choose either fiber or cable. a good quality smartphone that can be used as a hotspot. You know, one of the nice things, for example, of the new iPhones and the new Android devices is that these can be turned into a tether, and you can connect your computer to your phone in the event that your internet drops out for your house. Well, guess what? You've got this immediate backup connection that you can just use. Now, you're probably not going to be streaming 4K videos with this, but what's nice about it is that in a pinch, you're still going to be able to operate and you're not going to lose connectivity. A good office chair, keyboard, and mouse to go along with that desktop or notebook computer. I'm a big fan, for example, of being comfortable. I've got a nice chair. I've got a back support. I'm able to continue to work and operate so that I'm not focusing on using that tiny trackpad and that tiny keyboard, but rather I get a nice big normal desktop that goes along with that mobile computer. Minimum of two screens. There are lots of options now for mobile monitors. In fact, I've got some towards the end of our presentation that you can just plug in straight to a USB connection and it'll work. A great headset and webcam. You know, and a camera can make a big difference in terms of professionalism. This stuff is not expensive. This whole setup that I'm recommending here maybe is $2,000 to $3,000 if you had to buy it all from scratch. And the reality is you probably already have most of those pieces currently. Okay, so some tips I have from working from home. Okay, have a plan. When you're going to move home or you're going to start working telecommute, maybe it's from the client's office, or maybe you have an RV and you're going to go on a long trip and you want to continue to work there. Have a plan. I'm a big fan of planning ahead of time. I believe it was John Wooden who said a failure to plan is a plan to fail. And I really do believe that. Whenever I'm trying to start out with something new like this, I try to figure out those goals and objectives and work towards them to achieve them. Identify whatever your biggest hurdles might be and your biggest roadblocks and try to resolve those. If it's a dedicated workspace, well, how are you going to work around that so that you can ensure that you meet your objectives for work? Set work hours and daily limits. Most folks will find that they work more when they move home than they do when they were in the office, because it's very easy if you're not commuting and you don't have those social cues of like going to lunch or quit an hour. Okay. Try to contain your work to what your standard work week is. And also don't forget to take a lunch break. Communicate regularly with your colleagues. I cannot stress this enough. The importance of communication. Communication is the absolute key of this. If people feel like they don't know what you're working on and what you're doing, you know what? That's when things can kind of go haywire and people feel that, you know what? Hey, Steve's back at home and he's not doing anything. He's sitting on the couch watching Bonbons, watching daytime TV. But if you're communicating, you're present on applications like Teams, you're asking questions, you're sharing files, you're updating projects. People feel that their value is there and that you are a member of that team. Be available for social interaction. My opinion, for example, you need to invest in social time with your colleagues. And that social time, for example, it could just be, hey, how was your Memorial Day weekend? How are your kids doing? Hey, I hear your son's graduation's coming up. You know, congratulations on that. That small social interaction makes a big difference in establishing that esprit de corps. When meeting with your staff and clients, have your camera on. Okay, this is a big one for me. In our company, whenever we meet, we always have camera on. And what that does is that establishes professionalism. That also establishes, again, some of the community that you are going to lose if you're just a voice on the phone or an avatar in Teams. If people don't actually see you, they're not going to feel as invested in the relationship as they will be. I know this seems small, but it is really important to build that communication and to build that trust with other people. I also recommend that when you do speak with people, you need to avoid multitasking. You know, you wouldn't, for example, be clipping your nails in the middle of a business meeting when you're in the office, so you shouldn't be doing that while you're remote. You know, a big thing for me, for example, when I'm meeting with my staff, I'm meeting with clients, I always try to make sure that they can see my hands. I know this seems kind of weird, but if you could see my hands, then you know that, for example, I'm not working on some other project or I'm not double billing you with something else, working on a client project for whatever that might be. You know, so I try to talk with my hands, focus, and let them know that they have my attention and that I'm engaged with this conversation. Track your time on projects, set milestones, identify those success metrics with whatever they might be. Those success metrics might be number of client projects, number of engagements that you're working on, whatever it ends up being for your organization. But if you can track the projects, you can manage the projects, and you'll be able to communicate success with your company. So our focus for today is going to be online meeting and collaboration tools. Let's go ahead and frame some of the discussion for this and try to understand where our culture has changed, where our companies have changed, where our technology changed, and more. You know, COVID-19, if anything, just really kind of accelerated a trend that was already occurring. The writing was on the wall in a lot of respects. We knew, for example, that remote work was popping up. This was something that we were already building towards. But COVID just absolutely put the pedal to the metal and accelerated this incredibly fast. And it gave us, let's say, the motivation to be able to make this work. You know, when presented without a choice, you know, we tend to make things work, and we were not able to back out. And so I think a lot of businesses, as they got through this, they're like, oh, okay, maybe this isn't as scary as what we thought it was, and maybe we can be pretty successful. I think for a lot of organizations, this gave a better willingness, for example, to engage with people outside of the physical geographic space of their office. I mean, if you're not actually coming in, what's the difference between, you know, working from the same town the company is located in versus one that's maybe 50 miles away or 100 miles away? These remote tools improved a lot at the same time. You know, if everything is built and predicated on everything that came before it, but if the pandemic had to have occurred, man, are we lucky that it occurred in 2020 and not 1990 or in other time periods before that. The tools that are available to us now are so much better and so much better equipped than even just 5 years ago. Now, from the individual view, you know, kind of thinking back about this, I think most of us are pretty happy. And again, I'd love to know what your thoughts were if you were a remote worker, how your life has been impacted before and after. Go ahead and leave me a comment and let me know what you think. But I think now people are like, you know what, this works out pretty good. I don't really want to go back to getting in the car and commuting for an hour each way. According to a recent Department of Commerce report, that prior to the COVID, the average American commuting time was 54 minutes per day, which to me is just incredible. You start thinking about how many hours of your life are spent just going to and from a place. I think for many of us, the work-life balance may not improve, but it's under greater control with this remote work. You know, that you can take a walk in the middle of the day or drive your kids to work or have a lunch picnic in the park if need be. Some attributions like attention to detail, finishing the jobs, and concerns about meeting deadlines are changing too. I think how we value our work and how we value our position to the organizations is changing. Now, perhaps it could be the technology. You know, internet access has made things more ubiquitous and faster. Thankfully, with high-speed internet access being pretty widespread across the United States now, this wasn't just a West Coast or East Coast phenomenon, but affecting everybody across the country. We also saw improvements with reliability, speed, mobile functionality is better, and many of these tools, for example, provided great central administration, making it very easy for organizations to be able to grow and manage, even though they're not in the same physical space as their employees. Now, we also had improvements in tools. Services such as Microsoft 365, Google's Workspace program, as well as Zoho One and others became increasingly more powerful and also less complex, which is really kind of cool. These tools, for example, do more than they did even just a couple of years ago, and they're easier to use, most of which don't even require software. They're just completely running in the browser. So I think, for example, that has really kind of helped facilitate much of this growth. Now, I would encourage you, when you're working remote, it's important to build, again, good culture, good work habits, and don't just be busy, but be productive. You know, if I were to give you a Venn diagram, there's things that matter, there's things that you can control. Really, what we want to focus on is this kind of centerpiece right here, you know, the stuff kind of in the middle, the stuff that we actually are responsible for and the stuff that we actually can control. So, some other recommendations from working from home. Establish a routine. Try to set work hours for yourself, 8 to 5, 9 to 6, whatever it ends up being. Set an alarm clock, get up and start your day. Shower, shave, put on some makeup if you feel so desired, and get dressed for work. Even though I work from home, I wear a collared shirt every single day. It makes me feel like I'm in the office, and it makes me feel like a real professional. So that helps. Creating that structure, dedicated work area whenever possible, preferably exclusively used for work, you know, and if you can't do that, you know, you might want to find, if you don't have a dedicated room, maybe it's your garage or maybe it's some other place inside your home where you can at least know that when you're in that space, you're working. Get rid of clutter as much as possible, you know, so you can focus on the things that really matter. Maintain a to-do list. Okay, I'm a big fan of to-do lists. I use Microsoft Project to maintain my overall, let's say, deliverables for the company. But every single day I write a to-do list. And this to-do list, I love this size paper more than anything else because this to-do list is only about the stuff I can focus on for that particular day. And rather than kind of think about, like, what am I going to work on next? The last thing I do the night before is I write my list for what I'm going to accomplish that particular day. And then I take tasks that are inside of my project management tool, in this case, Microsoft Planner, but you could be using Trello or any other solution. I select about as much as I possibly can. I try to select 8 hours worth of work. And that way I'm not thinking about what I'm doing, but rather just selecting the next item from my list. As much as possible, get up, move around, plan in physical activity. My wife and I, we go for a walk every day at about 3 o'clock. Okay. I also am a big fan, for example, of having wireless headsets so I can get up and walk around during a conference call if needed. And I also have a standing desk. You know, this desk right here is electromechanical. It goes up and down, which is fantastic, allowing me to be able to stretch when I need to stretch. And whenever possible, reduce stress, whether it be listening to music, which I pretty much do constantly, some sort of breathing and meditation techniques can also work out really well. But these kind of small things can be really good with respect to establishing better overall work-life balance. Now, what kept businesses running well during the pandemic? Okay, well, we have capability and we also have improved tools. So improved internet access, improved remote access capabilities as well. Certainly paperless solutions that have facilitated easier and better document exchange and sharing, tools that helped promote enforced workflow so that people knew what they were working on and working in the correct way, as well as tools such as voice over internet protocol or VoIP, which allowed for organizations to be able to talk and have a phone system that looks and feels exactly like a phone system in the office, but distributed so people could work from anywhere. Now, major tools that help, software applications, certainly Microsoft 365. There should be no surprise there. 365 facilitated a lot of this, and the growth of Microsoft Teams and other applications like SharePoint and OneDrive and others really kind of improved, allowing this remote work to be successful. Other comparable applications, Slack, which is a comparable product to Microsoft Teams, Trello, which is a Kanban style of project management, Zoom, GoToMeeting, WebEx, and others. Other distributed workforce applications such as Salesforce really kind of helped improve this. So reflecting on things, man, if it had to have occurred, and I really wish it had not, whether it had to occur or not, unfortunately it did. But man, let's be thankful that it happened in the time period that it did. Even just a couple of years ago, it would have been a lot more difficult to manage. Now, what does collaboration mean to you? Okay, let's look at it from a couple of different perspectives. Let's talk about the people, and let's also talk about the systems that are involved with this. Okay, now on the people side, we want to provide and facilitate easy document sharing and easy work to allow for exchange of information and knowledge to flow between people fast and easily. So things like, for example, real-time co-editing. Okay. Utilizing services such as SharePoint or the Google Docs application allows for people, multiple people, sometimes dozens of people, to be able to be in the same spreadsheet, the same Microsoft Word document, the same PowerPoint presentation, and more, allowing people to be able to work on a document together. Rather than the traditional way of handling this, Steve works on it, sends it to somebody else, that other person will then review it and send it back, and then Steve is merging those changes back together. One of my favorite tools is Adobe Spark, which is part of the Adobe Creative Cloud. We make use of it extensively, which is fantastic for creative work because it allows us, for example, to manage our marketing projects, our sales projects, our social media efforts all in one central place, and to be able to communicate on creative works really, really well. Our ability to work with projects on people outside of our organization, whether they be vendors, clients, colleagues, you know, at another organization, have improved. Again, using tools like 365, Zoho, and Google Workspaces, and more. Coordinating and managing our team has improved. For our organization, we tend to use Microsoft Planner as well as a few other smaller applications to plan work out. And even though I've got staff in four states now, spread across four or five time zones, we're as productive, if not more productive, than a team twice our size because of the efforts that we have put in terms of managing our organization. We've got tools for group meetings, although we try to limit those as much as possible. We're not a big fan of all hands or company-wide meetings inside of our organization. We tend to focus on, you know, kind of small pods of people that need to get together and discuss something. Group meetings are so expensive, but we can do them, whether they be in Teams or in Zoom. We have easier way of being able to schedule and monitor our operations, and more. We also have better ways for our customers to be able to engage and provide feedback, whether they be simple things like group email or a full-blown ticket system where somebody can email in a ticket and have it be sent to a group of people to resolve. We can do it that way. Now, on the system side of this, you know, we have more and more what we call systems of records, you know, in terms of major systems for our organizations. We need to focus on better integration between these different systems to allow data to be shared more easily between these systems inside of our company. We need to consider and improve security whenever possible. Security concerns certainly are not any simpler with working remote. I'm not going to say they're any worse. You know, we can deal with most of the security stuff through proper planning, but it is something that we're going to want to consider and kind of plan for so that we're not blindsided by it in the future, as well as continued to work through and improve the software that you're using, whether it be 365 or Zoho or Workspace, Creative Cloud, more. We want to continue to maximize our investment for our software. We're already paying for it. We should just go ahead and use it to the best of our abilities. Now, one of the other things that's really cool is that we have improved mobile access as well. You know, these devices are not just phones. You know, they are tiny little computers that can make and receive phone calls. And the apps that are inside of our phones are, in my opinion, far more useful than what we would see, for example, on text messages or email or phone. You know, really, most of us are probably using our phones for apps way more than we are for making and receiving phone calls. So we can do things like, for example, online banking. We can do, for example, things like paying with services on our credit cards, you know, using services like Google Pay and Google Wallet and Apple Pay. We can have dedicated mobile apps for our organizations. This is an example of the Home Depot app, where you can literally send a chat message to Home Depot and say something like, hey, where can I find Star Drive 4-inch screws? You know, what aisle is it on? And they'll respond back to you. You know, it always seems like you can never find, you know, somebody at one of those big box stores. Well, now you can chat with somebody in a central office who has access to the schematics for that particular location. We'll tell you exactly where they are. Having a dedicated mobile app has never been easier for your organization. It can add a tremendous amount of value. We've got services like Adobe Sign or DocuSign or EchoSign that allow us to be able to facilitate, you know, more complex transactions like you know, anything requiring a legal signature, we can use these apps for now, as well as Lisco, which is a fantastic client portal solution that's great even for text challenge clients that we can utilize for exchanging of files and more. So there are lots of really kind of good solutions that we can use. And speaking of tech challenge clients, here's some ideas for collaborative innovation by author Bart Thalamy of the Wright Brothers Institute. Here's some things you might want to consider to kind of maybe help promote this collaboration, even for your more tech challenge folks. And this came from an interview from earlier this year talking about some of the major things that can help promote this inside the organization. You know, for example, challenging limiting beliefs. This is something that I definitely try to do whenever possible that, you know, hey, the way you thought it worked maybe isn't the way it actually works. And that changing our perspective and changing our beliefs can often lead to breakthroughs in, you know, how something can achieve, you know, really great things in an organization. Creating an uplifting, creative, and a solution oriented culture. Instead of focusing on the one reason why it won't work, focus on the 10 reasons why it will, and what tools and techniques and services and things that you need to put inside your organization to make it work effectively can be very helpful. Apply synergy, you know, for all realms of your life. In our organization, we have everything from software developers like myself and financial professionals like myself to actually, believe it or not, a fair number of our staff are musical theater people, you know, that have a background in creative writing. And we find that, for example, bringing people from different realms of life can bring solutions that would otherwise not be knowable. And that allows us to navigate our team and really kind of think outside the box really well. So thinking differently about different solutions can help bring creative problem solving. Now, it's not just about one thing. There are some things that we need to think through that will be and can be significant hurdles for being successful inside of our organization. We have things that are around the actual company itself, and then we have oversight related to that company. No organization is without its own politics and its own organizational structure and its own baggage, let's say, for lack of a better way of describing it. This baggage can often, you know, hold a company back with respect to some of the more advanced things that they could do and where they might want to be. Relationships, coordination, thinking through the well-being of staff and management, strategic improvement and motivation are all major considerations with respect for planning our remote work. Investing in people, investing in culture. If I were to say the most important thing that you can do is invest in people, because they are the most expensive thing that you can have, especially for a knowledge-oriented organization compared to a more product or organized organization. For financial professionals, whether they be a accounting firm or a professional service firm in of other ways, you know, your most expensive and most important asset walks out the front door every day at 5 o'clock. You know, if they were to leave your organization, it would cause significant hardship. So, you know, putting and setting people up for success, I think, to be a very important thing. Now, on the administration side of this, having the correct security, having the correct account and billing, how are you going to manage maintenance on these computers, especially if they're remote? How are you going to ensure they're up to date and meeting the latest security standards? Onboarding, as well as retention. You know, I would tell you as much as you can before having people move remote, you should have as many of these items figured out, which may or may not be possible depending on the nature of what you're doing and how quickly you need to do it. So let's go and get to the heart of the matter. What is required for effective meetings and collaboration? And it's not just one thing. There are hardware things and software things, but then there's softer things like just creating, a good culture, creating an environment where a meeting can be effective for an organization. You know, but from the, let's say, more philosophical components of this, the softer sides of this, there are some outcomes that we can hope to achieve that will infer whether or not this project or this meeting was successful. So the major sides of this that I think come from a good online meeting would people walking away with good comprehension of what we discussed. You know, if everybody walks away more confused than when they started that meeting, then I didn't do my job correct and that meeting wasn't really effective. I want engagement. You know, if I have 10 people in a meeting and only 3 people are talking, that meeting only needs to be 3 people. You know, I want people who are engaged. I want people to be able to provide feedback. And I want to create an environment where people feel like they can do that. I want a meeting where decisions are made. In our organization, we make a conscious effort of what needs to be a conversation, what needs to be an email. And whenever possible, we try to do the information gathering by email so that when we actually get together, a decision is made. One of the techniques that we focus on is that we try to work from the end of the meeting to the beginning of the meeting. By the end of this conversation, what will we want to have achieved? What decision are we looking for? Is it the direction we want to go on a client project? Is it the direction of this future scope of the business? Is it, hey, you know, or it could be something simple like, should we use Amazon Web Services or Microsoft Azure for this project? Well, if there's research that is required and people need to familiarize themselves with, you know, specific data points, I want them to do that before we're in the room. I don't want to waste everybody's time. You know, I'm reminded of the phrase, don't bore us, get to the chorus, you know, for pop music. And that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking to abstract out as much of the complexity as possible, put that onto the individual to educate themselves so that we're actually with each other. We're making decisions. We're talking about the big picture stuff and we're moving forward. And certainly as much as possible, keep it short. A 3-hour marathon meeting is of no use to anybody. In our organization, we try to keep anything involving more than 2 people to under an hour. And even for one-on-one meetings, we try to keep those to about 30 minutes. Don't feel that you need to take a whole hour when maybe you only need 30 minutes or so. Now, I'm going to speak out of the other side of my mouth and say the same thing, that I can tell you that in our meetings, you know, we also provide time for getting to know each other and personal stuff. Hey, how are the kids? What are your plans for this weekend? You know, I would say we generally try to avoid the business minutiae, but focus on the personal minutiae that I think builds camaraderie and a spirit to decor among the staff. So what makes a great virtual meeting? Things are accomplished. Minimal time is wasted. People feel that they're engaged. I do not feel bad in the slightest, and I encourage my staff at all of our meetings, if you feel like you don't need to be here, leave. I'm not offended when somebody's like, you know what? This is outside the scope of whatever I do. I have something else I need to accomplish. Go ahead and leave. You know, that's not a problem. I'm not offended if somebody like figuratively and literally gets up and walks out of the room, whether it be to go grab a cup of coffee or to take a nature break, or, you know, they say, hey, this isn't for me. I don't need to be here. If you don't feel like you need to be here, leave. You're wasting everybody's time and it's unneeded, you know, so go ahead and go. Relationships feel improved. We have a good productive discussion. We have direction in terms of where we're looking to go. People need to feel prepared and organized. I'm a big fan, for example, of agendas. I'm not doing it for every single meeting, especially for like pop-in meetings where I'm just talking with my business partner. But if I'm going to have more than 3 people in a room, and I start thinking about the billable time that goes into it, I'm going to organize it to the best of my ability so that we get the maximum possible output from that meeting. We have effective follow-up. I can tell you at the end of my meetings, the meetings that I run, within 24 hours, there's a summary of whatever was discussed, as well as any sort of action items. And usually an hour or two, maybe even a day before the next follow-up meeting, the action items are sent back out to people to ensure that whatever we said we were going to do was accomplished. And if not, we postpone the meeting. Information's available and there are minimal distractions. You know, in today's day and environment, you know, people are calling in from their mobile phone, from the car. You know, they might hear their kids yelling in the background or there might be dogs barking. Those aren't really a big deal, you know, anymore. I think we all understand that, you know, we have kids or we have animals in our home or the gardener happens to be coming that day or, you know, the mailman's dropping off a package, you know, but as much as possible, I try to minimize any distractions that might occur. And you should as well. Now, on the other side of it, what's an awful meeting? Nothing was decided. Everybody feels like it's a waste of time. You created conflict of some sort. Rambling, you know, I think we've all had that where somebody just goes on a diatribe, a monologue of sorts, and you're like, what the heck is he talking about? What was all that stuff you were talking about there? As much as possible, keep it short and concise. Mute everybody and then unmute as needed, especially if it's going to be a larger meeting. Keep it on task, on focus, and do not just repeat yourself and rehash stuff. There's especially a sense of, for example, with stand-up meetings or huddles, huddle-type meetings where you get together, everybody just says the same thing. You know, if it's going to be the same thing, don't meet. You know, wait until there's something different and then go ahead and meet. And there can also be other issues, you know, tech noise and things of this nature. But thankfully, I think most of us have figured out when you join a meeting, mute yourself. You know, when you join a meeting, have a headset on. Or if you're not going to use a headset, ensure that you've got something like a speakerphone. You know, here's a quick tech recommendation. This is a Jabra USB speakerphone. You can pick them up on Amazon. They're about $100 or so. This is incredible. If you meet with people all day, every day, like I do, and you don't want to wear a headset most of the time, this is a lifesaver. It's got great echo noise cancellation, and it allows you, for example, to be able to meet without having to wear that headset. The other thing I like about it, it's got a big old mute button right up at the top that you can hit that will mute yourself and allow you to be able to you know, not have a headset on, but also not have a ton of interference outside of it. And again, that is a Jabra USB speakerphone.
All right, folks, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed our presentation and podcast for today. Let's go ahead and have our three review questions, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up and get you on your way. Our first review question, which of the following are needed for online meetings and collaborations? Is it web meeting software? Is it connectivity? Is it endpoint device, some sort of computer, smartphone, or VoIP? Well, it's accidentally being displayed at the moment, and the correct answer is, as you guessed it, it is all of the above. All of those are really kind of necessary for you to have a good, productive meeting. You need to have some sort of meeting software, and there are plenty to choose from. In my opinion, you can't really make a bad choice these days. My personal favorites are Zoom and Microsoft Teams. I like using Zoom for external stuff. So if I'm meeting, for example, with clients, colleagues, people outside of my company, I like that because it allows for us to be able to easily connect with each other. Teams is what my preference is for internal meetings. So if I'm going to meet with my staff or my business partner, we'll use that because it's just integrated with everything else that we have and everybody's on it already. So all of those are needed. Good internet connectivity can make or break your meeting. If you're always dropping, people are going to be frustrated and you'll be frustrated. And likewise, just having a reasonable computer and a smartphone or something like that will be a good step along the way. Let's go ahead and have our second review question. Okay, which of the following are collaboration tools? Is it Microsoft Teams, Slack, Zoho One, or all of the above? No shocker here, it is all of the above. You can use any one of those tools to be able to communicate and collaborate. Teams would definitely be my preference. I think overall it's the best tool. As our company is very integrated with Microsoft 365, it's just included with the service we already use, and we're very happy with it. Slack and Zoho, though, also really good options if you're looking for a not Microsoft approach. Our third question. What makes a great virtual meeting? Okay, should you have accomplished something? You bet ya. You betcha. You should absolutely accomplish something. Otherwise, what's the point of meeting? Should you be prepared? Yes. And organized? Absolutely. Just like any in-person meeting, you should be prepared and organized as well. Should there be information shared? Absolutely. So the correct answer here, again, all of the above. All of these above make a good and successful virtual meeting. Just like an in-person meeting. Well, I hope you enjoyed our podcast for today, and I hope you learned something. Today, we went ahead and we discussed some of the major components of working effectively online and collaborating and communicating online. We talked about some of the benefits and risks of moving home or moving out of the office, as well as introduced many tools, programs, and services that you can choose to utilize. And we also talked about some effective techniques for managing and creating effective collaboration inside your company. This is just part one of a two-parter. Our next series, we're going to look even greater at depth at the work and home tools, both as generic tools as well as industry-specific stuff. And we'll talk about how working at home and remote work aren't necessarily the same thing and how they can often have different needs and how do we address some of those needs for each of those specific circumstances. Now, as a reminder, if you're a financial professional, you can earn CPE credit for today's podcast. After watching or listening, head on over to cpetoday.com and use course code OMC1. Take a brief 5-question quiz and you will have earned a credit for today's class and you will be well on your way to maintaining that professional license. So again, cpetoday.com for all of your continuing education needs. If you like our content, and I hope you do, please consider following us on social media. On almost all social media channels, you can find us as at CPE Today. You can like us on Facebook. You can subscribe to us on YouTube, follow us on Twitter and Instagram and more. We're always trying to put out new content and helpful tips to help you stay on top of your game. And you can always listen to the CPE podcast live twice a week, usually Tuesdays and Fridays at 11 in the morning Pacific. You can also listen after the fact on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and more. Wherever you happen to get your content, we hope to be there. Thank you so much for your time and attention today. It has been a pleasure, and I look forward to seeing you back in the office the next time around.